Good afternoon. My name is Stephanie. I'm an abstinent compulsive overeater. Welcome to the Importance of Working All 12-Step workshop this afternoon. Today we'll be looking at step four. My co-leader for today is Nancy. Please help us open the meeting with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. All right. Welcome, everyone. Today, we're going to be referring to a lot of OA-approved literature throughout the workshop, the 12 Step and 12 Traditions of Overeaters Anonymous, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the For Today Meditation Book, as well as the Voices of Recovery. OA has a 4-Step Inventory Guide that we'll be talking about, the 12 Step Workshop for Overeaters Anonymous. There's a great pamphlet called Sponsoring Through the 12 Steps, the 15-Question Pamphlet, and the soon-to-be-released 12-stepping a problem. And I want to let you know that at the end of this workshop, there will be time for sharing. I'm going to be our first speaker, and then we'll have a few announcements, and then Nancy will share. What I'd like to do is tell you a little bit about myself so that you'll understand I'm a real compulsive overeater. I was introduced to Overeaters Anonymous in my early 30s. I'll be 69 in a few months. And when I came in the first time, I didn't understand about the 12 steps. I was just looking for the quick fix diet plan, and it didn't really work for me because I didn't work the steps. I mean, the food plan worked very well because in that day and age, they assigned you a food plan, and the group that I went to had a specific food plan, and because it eliminated my binge foods, I was able to lose weight. To back up a little bit, the first time I became aware that I was a compulsive overeater as I reviewed my history was at age 4. I was in this contest where it was pin the tail on the rabbit, and the prize was this big chocolate thing, and I cheated. I looked underneath the blindfold to win the prize. From there it began. I weighed about 180 pounds before I graduated from high school, never had a date. As I said earlier, I came in my early 30s. At that time, I weighed 230 pounds. Didn't work the step, used the program as a support for the diet they gave me, lost a bunch of weight, was very happy, discontinued going to meetings, and as happens with most people, I think, that don't work the steps, over a period of time, I regained the weight and more, got a little bonus there, became very, very desperate. I pulled out the food plan that I had previously, and I just couldn't stick on it for more than a day. So thankfully, God gave me the gift of desperation, and I found my way to an OA meeting. That was in August 1986, but mine has not been a straight-line recovery. I had multiple relapses. I'm grateful to say today I have more than 10 years of back-to-back abstinence, and that is strictly a reflection of a spiritual awakening through the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. I'm maintaining about 115, 120-pound weight loss. My current abstinence date is May 29, 2004. I was one of those people, I had to put the food down first. I found it impossible to get connected with the higher power when I was still eating. So I'm really grateful that we're doing this workshop on the importance of working all the steps. And, you know, I was taught early on that it's important to work them in order. One of the things that was really helpful to me, there's a reading in the Voices of Recovery on August the 8th that talks about God using the steps like an artist would carefully restore a beautiful painting. And that's been really helpful. That visual made a lot of sense to me. I wasn't an entirely broken person. I still held a job. I still had a family. There were people that liked me. But I needed a lot of restoration, and the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous have done a wonderful job with that. We are going to go ahead and move into the step part. One of the things that I would like to focus on a little bit in my part of the sharing is that this workshop is focused on the importance of working all the 12 steps. For me, I found that it was critical to have worked the other steps before I was willing to do the 4th step. There is a reading on June 19 in the For Today that says, there is a reason for each of the 12 steps. I cannot pick up and choose the ones I want to take and skip the rest. I think that was one of the reasons that I had some of those relapses was I didn't really want to be fully forthcoming in my 4th step. I didn't really want to make amends to all the people I hurt. And this idea of working through all the steps has been really helpful to me in terms of how my recovery has evolved. You'll find if you go on the OA website that we have podcasts on 4 of the previous workshops that were done. We did one on step 0, which is about the preparation for being ready to take step 1. There's a place in the big book and how it works, where it talks about if you have decided that you want what we have and are willing to go to any length, then you're ready to take certain steps. I needed that desperation, and I needed that willingness. It wasn't enough for me to want. I had to really sincerely have that honest desire to recover from compulsive overeating. Another part that was discussed in that workshop that I have found helpful for me, too, is understanding the nature of my disease, that it wasn't strictly an allergy of the body that set up the craving and made me want more and more of my addictive substances. Neither was it just the obsession of the mind, but that combination of both of those things kept driving me back to the food. The understanding of how this disease works was really well explained in the doctor's opinion in the big book. And also, if you read the appendices in the Overeaters Anonymous 3rd edition, they've added another one where dietitian, I believe, talks about the connection with the plan of eating and our recovery, and that was really helpful. So before I was ready for step one, I had to do all this kind of preparatory work. I had to know that I needed help. I had to kind of understand why my food had spiraled out of control. And then in step one, I had to get honest. I had to admit that I was powerless over food and that my life was unmanageable. It took me an honest look to see that I couldn't manage it, to recognize all the times I tried the diet, all the times I tried a number of other things, exercise, all those kind of things, to realize that my best thinking just wasn't going to get me out of it. There's a line in the OA 12 and 12, I think on page 2, that says, whatever the cause, today we're not like normal people when it comes to food. And that was something I really needed to get in my heart of hearts before I was able to be back-to-back, day in, day out, abstinent. No matter how long I had not eaten XYZ, it didn't matter. I'd always go back to it. One of the things, too, that I think about when I read the first reading in The Voices of Recovery on January 1, is when we gave up binge food, abstinence was easy. The compulsion was lifted. And when I set the food aside, it made it much easier for me to have the clear head to begin to work the steps. So for me, the action in step one was to get honest, to begin to develop a plan of eating that it would allow me to put down the food. And from there, I moved to step two, and with that, I, you know, developed the hope that perhaps I could do this thing. You know, I saw other people in the meetings that were happy, that were in a normal-sized body, that encouraged me to continue to do what I was taught to do. There is a line that was really helpful to me. I think it's in the OA 12 and 12, page 13, which it says, ours is a spiritual program, not a religious one. I remember the first OA meeting back when it was just a diet club for me. The thing that I found most difficult to deal with was people talking about God. You know, I just came in to find the magical diet so that I wouldn't be fat anymore. I really didn't understand that mine was a spiritual problem. And as I worked through the second step, that became more and more apparent to me. And I'm just so grateful that nobody told me what the God of my understanding had to be or what my higher power had to be. It just had to be something that worked. If you listen to the podcast that was done on step two, one of the things that the speaker talked about is that step two is a bridge between step one and step three. And she talked about the hoop you have to jump through is a lot wider than you think. And that's from the OA 12 and 12, page 26. And I think that was really important for me to understand, was that I just needed that little bit of faith that there was something bigger than me that could help me, because I had been one of those folks who had been very self-sufficient and taught that I could do anything, be anything if I tried hard enough or worked hard enough. And this was just a problem I could not live. So for me, the action became using the tools to help me stay on my plan of eating, and then to look at the folks that were in the meetings to see what I might want to design as my sane and sound ideal. That comes from the big book, page 69, where it's to set out a sane and sound ideal for the future. So once I did that, that moved me to step three. If I have problems in my recovery, it almost comes back always to step three, where I've stepped back into the driver's seat. You know, step three is the faith step. It says, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. And I had to let go of that long-standing self-sufficiency. I had to make the decision to turn my will, which for me was my thinking, and my life, which was the sort of actions I did. And for me, the actions came before the thinking. I found that as I began to do things that were right actions, my thinking about things began to change. And so for me, the action affiliated with step three was to say your third step prayer. It's on page 63 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. And that has been a constant in my life almost every day. And when I get in trouble, I say that prayer. It just reminds me that I fall so easily into that bondage of self. And then there's a couple lines out of the OA 12 and 12 in the third step on page 27 that says, once we compulsive overeaters truly take the third step, we cannot fail to recover as we live out our decision day by day. Our higher power guides us through the remaining 12 steps. It wasn't just that I turned my life and my will over to God, but that what that did is that gave me the willingness to take the rest of the steps. The last part of step three was that need to move on to step four. And step four, which is the primary thing we're going to be discussing today, is about courage, and it's made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. What I found was that in this step, there were tangible things that I really needed to do. It needed to be searching, and the definition of searching, which I looked up, means to examine in order to discover. And I've heard other speakers talk about the need to uncover, discover, and discard. And as I begin this fourth step and all the other stuff, I begin to do that. And then the fearless is the courage part. Like probably a lot of you, the hardest part about the fourth step was thinking about it. In the OA 12 and 12, there's an introduction that says, the fourth step calls for us to examine our lives up to the present day, writing down all important actions and events of a moral or ethical nature, our feelings about them, and the character traits in us from which these actions stem. In AA 12 and 12 on page 42, is they talk about the instinct, that we have our instincts for a reason and that we couldn't function completely without them, but that what happens for most of us is that they often exceed their proper functions, that they get out of whack. And for me, that was certainly the case. So here I am on that step four. My sponsor has really encouraged me to do that. She's kind of threatened me with the thought that if I don't continue to work the steps, that I'll go back to eating compulsively. At that point in my recovery, I was maybe 30 days in, and I really needed that sort of push, that kick in the pants to make me do it. So I was thinking about, why do I want to do it? And the first thing is I want to do it because I want to stay abstinent. And also that growing awareness that there was something more, that I needed that spiritual awakening. There are a couple of readings from the Four Today that I really like with regard to this one. It's from September the 29th. It says, the four-step inventory, taken not once but repeatedly, allows me to keep yesterday as a teacher on an ongoing basis, and everything learned advances my recovery. And for me, that was important when I was a chronic relapser, because if I couldn't look back and see what caused the situation, what my thinking was and my actions were that led me back to the food, it was like a big waste, and it led me to self-pity and depression and all that. But when I could go back with the help of a sponsor and review that and come out with some lesson learned, it was really helpful to me in terms of moving forward. Also, there's another reading on October 16th that said, I'm allowed to make mistakes and so are other people. Error can be pointed out and corrected without harsh measures or cruel words, without venomous self-recrimination. And for me, that was important. Not to dwell in the past, not to dwell in what I'd done wrong. Once I cleaned up my mess and moved forward, and that's one of the things that we learn, I think, as we study the 12 steps. So now I know why I want to do it. I want to stay abstinent. I want to learn from my past. I want to move forward into this spiritual awakening. So then how am I going to do it? For me, it required having a greater fear of going back out to the food than working the four steps. One of the things that I had to figure out about how to do it was reviewing what they say in the OA literature and the AA literature. All of it seems to say that I need to be honest. I need to take an honest look at what's happened in the past, that my inventory needs to be written. As I began to write things, I began to see the truth. And then I needed to practice a balance when I did my inventory. Being a woman of extremes, I needed to try to balance that out, not to let myself off the hook, but to see the whole big picture. One of the things that I really want to emphasize in my part of sharing here is that OA has a lot of support to do a four-step, and that the important thing is just to do it. We have an OA four-step inventory guide that's available on the OA website. We have the OA 12 and 12, which is very helpful. There are lots of questions in there. There's the 12-step workbook of Overeaters Anonymous that directs us back to the OA 12 and 12 in the big book. There's also a great pamphlet called Sponsoring Through the 12 Steps. I've used that before, which has enabled me to work the steps at the same time with my sponsees, and the mutual sharing has been really helpful. Also, the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, the one I did my first four-step on, and many years later, after probably having done a dozen or more four-steps, I am doing another one in more intimate, more involved detail. There are many ways of doing the four steps. Some people do it historically. Some people do it by people, principles, institutions. Like I said before, for me, the most important thing was that I needed to do it. The big book talks about looking at things like resentments, fears, relationships, including sexual relationships. Our OA 12 and 12 and the four-step inventory guide talk about pride and fears, anger and resentment, sex, honesty, and negative thinking. I've used the big book many times. I like the fact that it set out in very clear language what the steps are. I also like the OA 12 and 12 that you're asked all the questions. For me personally, what I found was that with the OA 12 and 12, I had a tendency to answer yes to every question. The way I'm doing my fourth step currently, I've been invited by my sponsor to the third step prayer and invite God in and ask him to show me what I need to write about. And that has been very, very helpful. I want to tell you a little story about the first four step that I did and the importance of it being thorough and fearless. There was a deep, dark secret I had, and I spent probably five times as much time talking about stealing pencils from work as I did that. But it was the thing that allowed me to get it out in the sunlight of the spirit, and during further four steps, I was able to look at it. I think for me, that's why I just keep harping on the idea that it's just so important to do it, however you're able to do it. Through a more involved 10th step or going back and doing another four step, I've been able to clear up more wreckage of my past. I think that the most important thing that I can recall ever learning in a step study for me was when I was able to stay abstinent long-term. There was a point at which I realized that the God of my understanding loved me no matter what, whether I was abstinent or not, and that he couldn't love me any more than he did, and he wouldn't love me any less if I wasn't abstinent. And somehow for me, knowing that, I don't know, it was like a spiritual awakening. It made me more willing to do what was necessary day by day to stay abstinent and to work the steps. It was just a real wonderful thing for me. And I'm going to close by sharing some of the four-step promises that we have in our OA and AA literature. One is in the big book on page 64. It says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. The next three are from our OA 12 and 12. It says, as we work the four-step, we develop a new ability to see our own dishonesty and a greater willingness to live by truth. Wow, what a great promise. The next one, it was not until we made the four-step inventory that we began to realize that we don't have to live with fear. That was important for me. It's on page 37. I don't have to fear looking at what's there, but so much fear about what I was going to find. And there was nothing new. I mean, I already knew all this stuff, but it was bringing it to the forefront with that honest look. The last one is in page 44 on the OA 12 and 12, but it's from our invitation for you. And it says, we're moving beyond the food and emotional habit to a fuller living experience. So I'll close with that. And I want to make a couple of announcements before we continue with Nancy, who's going to be our second speaker. I want to let you know that this workshop is being recorded, and it will be posted on the OA website podcast page, as well as other podcast feeds such as iTunes. And if you speak, it's considered implied consent to have your voice and your share recorded and posted. To preserve your anonymity, please use only your first name or a fictitious name when you share. In accordance with Tradition 6 and 10, please refer only to OA-approved literature when you share. And this is really important. According to our seventh tradition, we are self-supporting through our own contributions. Even though this is a virtual workshop, we still have expenses for the website and uploads of the podcast. Please use special workshop meeting number 82278 when making your contribution. Go to OA.org and click on contributions, or you can send your contributions directly to the World Service Office, P.O. Box 44020, Rio Rancho, New Mexico, 87174. We thank you very much for helping us to carry the message. So now, please welcome Nancy, who's going to share on step four.
Hi, my name is Nancy, and I'm a gratefully recovering abstinent compulsive eater. Thank you, Stephanie, for your share. It contained a lot of the same stuff. And what I want to do is I want to zero in more on how step four worked for me. I also, all of the literature that Stephanie presented, I encourage everybody that's listening to avail yourselves of that. We have OA literature that is now for everyone. Doesn't matter what your eating disorder is, it's complete and it's concise and it's healing. When I came in here, well, let me tell you first, I'll start at the beginning, I guess. If I live until the end of September this year, I intend to mark 42 years in OA. And that was interrupted only on my second Thanksgiving Day by a relapse that allowed me to get into 5 months of relapse. And I was very fortunate that I ran into another OA person and in the supermarket. And that's what got me back, by the grace of God and the fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous. I've not find it necessary to take a compulsive bite since then. And that taught me a grave lesson. It taught me that, number one, that I wasn't as smart as I thought I was. Also, by that same grace and that same fellowship, I have been maintaining almost 150-pound weight loss for that time. I came in a very small meeting. There were only two meetings in the Greater Detroit Intergroup. Well, the Intergroup hadn't even formed then, and we didn't have that literature that we have now today. And so we got our abstinence through working the AA 12 and 12 and the AA Big Book. We had a few pamphlets, which are still in print as far as I know, but that was the literature that we had to work with. And I came in on that meeting, and it was a very small church. There were only seven people there, counting myself, because I had seen the program work in one of my best friends, who I came in with 20 years of amphetamine diet pills under my belt, and that wasn't working because, obvious, I weighed a little over 325 pounds, and so obviously that had started working, but I still needed the high that I got from those. And I saw her, who had never been able to take a diet pill, lose 80 pounds because she had gone to Overeaters Anonymous. And that's what convinced me that if it worked for her, it would work for me. And we went into this little meeting. Of course, all the women in that was in 1973, all the attendants were women, because at that time it was still considered a women's weight loss group. And I had tried every diet and every crazy weight loss scheme known to humankind, and also knew the caloric value of every food that we could eat, and that still didn't keep me. I'm a yo-yo. I would gain enormous amounts of weight and then go on a diet or working out or running. I'm an exercise bulimic as well. And I would run and I would lose 65, 70, 80 pounds all at one time. And then I would pound on my kitchen counter and say, I'm never going back to that. And then within a year, I would have it all back on and some. And so I very cautiously went to Overeaters Anonymous because I really didn't know if it would work. And first of all, I thought it was a cult because I came in as a Christian and I thought I knew all about religion. And when they started talking about God, I wanted to bolt for the door. And then they explained to me that it was a God as I understood them, that they weren't offering any kind of a religious doctrine. It was only relief from compulsive eating, which I didn't really understand how the two were going to work out. But nevertheless, I think that instinctively I knew that that was the last house on the block for me. And so this had to work. The night that I got there, these women were studying step eight in the AA 12 and 12 in Big Book. And they studied a different step every week. And then they would study a tradition once a month, whatever the tradition of the month was. And they taught me how to be able to change alcohol to food and alcoholic to compulsive eater. And the shoe fit perfectly. And so that's how I, through God's grace, I was able to get involved in that. By the time we worked our way around the steps, you know, 9 through 3, I had a little bit better understanding of what the steps would do. Everybody talked about the woes and the horror of doing a 4-step inventory. And I'm really grateful that I came in on a step that was past that, because I began to see how the steps fit in place. And they told me that when I worked the steps, the suggestion would be to work them in order, because that's the way people had found that it worked the best. If I flopped around and did the step as I thought it should be, or whatever was bothering me, to at least give it a try a few times and to work them in order. We had no 4-step guides, and I didn't understand what the 4th step was in the big book. I couldn't put the columns together. I just didn't understand what that would do as far as making me lose weight. And later on, even after I'd been in many years, I didn't quite understand that it was up to me to make that 4th column. I thought that the answers were supposed to magically appear on my paper when I did that. And so it frustrated me. My sponsor at that time recommended that I go to other 12-step programs and find their inventory guides to do my 4th step. Which I did. And so I would follow those religiously, and I found that it was all about taking a look at me. Step 1 had shown me not only that I was powerless over food, but that I was powerless over people, places, and things that could make me eat. And I didn't even know it. I didn't know that it was those things that were affecting my life. I didn't know that I was a control freak. I didn't know what I didn't know. And so this taught me, slowly but surely, a whole new way of living. That small meeting that I went into on September 28, 1973, there was only one person there who was just a week ahead of me, and the rest of the people there were thin. I knew that I wanted what they had, and I didn't even know what they had. But every single one of them, when I talked to them on the break, talked about it was the steps that delivered them from the compulsive eating, and that they just had to take it one day at a time. They didn't have to change their whole life, nor did they have to get on a scale and have somebody call out to a room full of people how much they weighed or how much weight they had gained or lost. And that was pleasing to me, because I had tried all of those things, and I had tried some of them so well that I was a 3-time, you know, charter member, and they worked. But it was the endurance. It was keeping it off that I found it was the magic in working the step. They said that I had to get to know myself, and I didn't know myself. I didn't know myself from a stranger walking down the street, because I had never had to take a look at myself. So when she suggested I get a guideline for an inventory from someone else, of course, I'm a compulsive eater. Remember, I'm compulsive liver, and I went out and bought one of every one that I could find. And I went through those. I also went through the 12 and 12 in the big book that we had then, and finally decided, well, okay, I might as well bite the bullet, because when we got around to step 4, my sponsor said, now you've got to do it. It doesn't have to be magnanimous. So I put pen to paper and wrote the great American novel. There was a little history and mystery and sex and spice. What I had done was that I had taken everybody else's inventory and didn't know that either. When I went back to her with this, there was 24 and a half pages. And I handed it to her, and she read about a half paragraph to me, and she handed it back to me, and she said, you need to do some more writing. And I was aghast. And I said, what do you mean I do need to do some more writing? She said, well, there's a few things that you need to know about this inventory. And you know what? The reason I'm sharing those with you today is because they still work for me. She said, number 1, you've got to take your own inventory, not the inventory of everybody in your circle of influence, whether you like them or not. And the other thing is, don't be afraid to look at yourself and to see, will the real person please step forward? Will the real Nancy, you know, speak up? And she said, and the other thing that you need to know is you're not going to cover all of your defects in one sitting, that you have embarked on a lifelong learning program. And that was in the big book that I had read that. It was also in the 12 and 12. She said, you're not going to do one inventory and be done. This is going to go on the rest of your life. And I said, well, how will I know when I'm done? She said, you won't, unless God lets you know. And she said, but there's a whole lot of water that has to go under the bridge by that time. And so she said, you may have to do 100 inventories, but you will know when it's time for you to do an inventory. It's an ongoing process, just like life is an ongoing process. I went back and I wrote another inventory, and I had trouble with it at the beginning, of course, because I wasn't really sure that I was giving the right answers. And so she gave me that dreaded phrase when I called her and said, I'm just having difficulty. I just can't see me, for instance, the way other people see. Well, she said, oh, well, why don't you come over for a cup of tea? And I knew whenever she said that, I was in for a lesson. She was the kindest and most gentle person on the earth, and she had kept her weight off. And so I went over to her house, and she said, I want to show you something. And so she took me into her bathroom, and we both looked in the mirror together. And she said, I want you to tell me what you see. Tell me your characteristics on what you see. And I said, she said, what do you look like in this mirror? And I said, well, okay, I've got red hair. Good. That's a good characteristic. She said, what else do you see? I said, well, I got freckles. She said, good. That's a good characteristic. She said, you're on a roll. Keep going. And so we went through this thing, you know, well, I've got long hair and I've got my height and my weight and the whole business. And every time I mentioned one of these physical characteristics, I saw her eyes light up. So finally, she let me go through a few of them until I couldn't think of any more. And she said to me, okay, now let's flip this screen over, and I want you to tell me what your emotional characteristics are, what your emotional responses are, fear, anger, whatever. And the first thing that came out of my mouth was, I'm angry. She said, yes, you are. That's good. What's another characteristic? I'm fearful. I'm fearful this won't work. She said, good, you're on a roll. You've got the idea. Now go home and just let that be the basis. Start searching for the emotional characteristics, because this is an emotional disease. And it's the emotions that you can't deal with that are going to make you eat. And she said, write down all of these emotions that you find that are causing you to eat. It's not the people that's involved, but it's the people, places, and things that will make you eat, because those are your triggers. So I took the only literature that we had in hand and went home, and I have read it differently. There was something that happened that day when she helped me see the emotional being that I am. That kind of opened the door for my recovery, and it has changed as I've come along. Started out then that about every year to year and a half, I felt like I needed to do another inventory. She'd say, hey, if you feel you need to do another inventory, do another inventory. And as we went on, our intergroup formed, and I got into service, and I found that other people were doing inventories also, and they were doing the emotional inventories, and they were doing the food inventories, and all of these things that would be triggers to make them eat. And so I was learning the lessons from other people as well. The meetings grew in the greater Detroit area, and I had lost enough weight. I became a quote-unquote circuit speaker. But one of the things that I noticed when I went around to the other meetings, when people shared, they were identifying the same things that I was identified, that I had been completely ignorant of them until I had had new glasses on. And that was through the help of the sponsor and the literature that was available, I began to read it differently. And all of a sudden, it started making sense because I could identify it from the emotional being that I was. And you know what? That also helped me keep the fork down. I found out during that trial times, and I never broke my abstinence after that Thanksgiving Day thing, because I found that whenever something was bothering me, I could stop and inventory it then. And that's what my sponsor says to me today. I have a different sponsor. I live in a different part of the country. I eat different food. I have a different circle of influence. But you know what? The same Nancy is still present in all of those things, because I have a better life. Whenever I find something today that's causing me resistance when I'm resistant to anything or anything starts to make me angry, I think, wait a minute, this doesn't work. And I call my sponsor and she says, well, have you inventoried it? You know what? That always clears away the burning bush, if you will. And I stand there face to face with Nancy. I want to tell you a little story that happened after I was about 10 years in program. And this is not knowing what you don't know and how my higher power that I choose to call God has shown me through this fourth step that I become more aware of my behavior. When I was in high school, I worked after school at a movie theater. And the movie theater was in the center of town. I started out as an usherette. And then after I was there about 6 months, they put me on the candy counter. And a few more months later, they elevated me to the head candy girl left, and so they elevated me to the candy, head candy girl. We could eat all of one of the popcorn things that we wanted to, but we weren't supposed to eat the candy unless we paid for it. Well, I figured out, I was pretty good at math, and I figured out how I could eat what I wanted to for free. And so I started out eating the candy and cooking the books, so to speak, on our inventory, and it got only worse. And I was, of course, gaining weight. And so consequently, eventually, I started taking money out of the till and stealing. A series of events happened where I lost the job, and it wasn't because I was stealing or whatever. It was through some home issues. And so I lost the job at the theater and totally forgot about it. Years later, I'm married. I mean, it's got to be at least 10 years in program. I'm married. I have a child. And I'm on my way to my church. And on my way to my church, I had to pass right by this theater. Stopped at a traffic light, and kitty-cornered from me was this theater where I had worked. Now, I had done several inventories prior to this time. All of a sudden, there it was in glaring neon lights across my eyelids. You owe these people some money. I went home, I wrote an inventory about it, and sure enough, that's what all came out. That led me on down the line to the other steps, see? So I rectified that, and I don't want to leave you hanging, but eventually my sponsor and I worked it out how much money I would owe them. The theater manager had died. I mean, the theater owner had. They had sold the theater to and somebody else. I went back to the theater, told them what had happened, and I took cash, and it was a different manager, and he let me sit there through all of the embarrassment and whatever, and he finally took the cash and said, that's okay, lady, I'm in a 12-step program too. So I can look back on that and see how that inventory started a chain of events that provides healing in my life, and it ends up sometimes where I have to go back years later and see that. But if it hadn't been for the inventory process, I doubt very strongly if I would have been able to see that. And we find it out in different ways. Today, as I mentioned, if there's something that bothers me or I'm resistant to or I don't understand, I call my sponsor and I say, I'm having a problem with. When my feet hit the floor in the morning, if the world seems out of sorts for me and I don't even know what it is, I don't know if I've had a bad dream or I don't know if I've had a bad night. I don't know if I've had a bad day, but the whole problem is I have to inventory me and find out what's going, and I want to protect my abstinence. 9 times out of 10, I will call my sponsor and say, I don't know what's going on with me, but I want to commit an abstinent day because something is sure to throw me a curve for right now, and I'm going to inventory it and see what happens. And you know what? Most of the time it's gone by the time noontime comes. But the inventory process has become integral to my staying abstinent and to being able to check my feelings and see what's going wrong inside me. And even if I'm sitting in a meeting, if there's something that disturbs me, I will make a note on this. You know, I've got what's disturbing me about this? And in step 10 in the AA 12 and 12, I found out that if something is disturbing me, something is disturbing me. Every single day of my life, I thank God that we have the literature in OA that we do, because there are subtle differences in an inventory. It's not as black and white as it was in the AA books. And now I go mostly, when something is bothering me, I go to those questions that are at the end of step 4. in the OA 12 and 12. I think that's the best piece of literature that has ever been written for the compulsive eater, because it zeroes in on exactly what's bothering me, and it helps me see what's going on with Nancy today. It helps me deal with my feelings. It helps me deal with putting the fork down and getting on with the business of life. The abstinence, strong abstinence checklist, and I'm just jumping with glee because they've now put that on a wallet card. For years, I've carried the four today in my wallet, and that kind of governs my day. My promises, every night, I take an inventory. What I do is I take the promises out of the big book, and I put them in a form of a question. Have I been selfish and self-centered today? And so at any rate, I grab any of the OA literature that I can today. As a matter of fact, there are many times when my big book may be collecting a little bit of dust when I'm doing an OA inventory. But that is what has kept me abstinent for this long time. And it's also what has given me a new lease on life. I have questions that you might want to think about. My questions are, am I afraid of something? What is my fear? If something is bothering me, what am I afraid of? Am I afraid of change, whether it's physical, emotional, or spiritual? Am I hanging on to a grudge or a resentment? Am I experiencing jealousy, envy, or guilt? Am I a perfectionist, or am I overly dependent? Or do I live or work in an abusive situation? Am I afraid of intimacy? All those things are at the end of step four, all those questions, and they make me take a square look at me without having to point fingers at anybody else. And so step four in the OA 12 and 12 has really been my dependency. And thank you for allowing me to share with you.
Thanks, Nancy. There are some questions that Nancy and I looked at in addition to the ones that she talked about, and I'm going to read those for you. The first one is, do I have reservations about starting a fourth step? What are they? How can God help me do this step? The next one, which is kind of a consolidation of the things Nancy talked about, is, am I hanging on to a grudge or resentment? Do I experience jealousy, envy, or guilt? Am I a perfectionist, or am I overly dependent? And the third question is, what am I willing to do today to start my four-step inventory? What are some of the methods I can use to do a four-step? These questions are ones that you might journal about, you might share with your sponsor, you might just want to contemplate. We're going to open it up for sharing, but just as a reminder, I want to let you know that this workshop is being recorded and will be posted on the OA website podcast page. If you speak, it's considered implied consent to have your voice and your share recorded and posted. To preserve your anonymity, please use only your first name or a fictitious name when you share. And in accordance with Tradition 6 and 10, please refer only to OA-approved literature when you share. So please, we're opening it up. Press star 6 to unmute anyone who'd like to share.
Hi, this is Gloria. I just want to say thanks for a wonderful workshop. I've gotten so much out of this. And Nancy, I hadn't really heard your whole story, so It's wonderful. Thank you both so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Gloria.
Hi, this is Tina. May I share?
Sure, Tina. Go ahead.
Thank you both. It was a tremendous workshop, as they all have been, but this was very, very powerful. It took me down memory road. I myself have done the fourth step in a variety of ways, and each time it was the exact way that I was supposed to do it at that time. And my higher power knew when I was ready to look at certain things and not look at certain things. As someone said, with my first fourth step, when I started talking, it was all you. And my sponsor brought me back to, okay, what is your part in this? And through the years, I have been able to look at that. And it is very freeing. But, you know, we have so many different ways to do the fourth step now that it's sometimes confusing. But for me, it's like, the most important thing is to do the fourth step, and that it is so freeing, and it is part of the road toward recovery. And both of you just gave wonderful examples and a lot of great literature, so I thank you. If someone is hesitant, I was hesitant. I lived through it, and my sponsor still loved me. So with that, thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Tina.
I hope that you will join us on May the 10th when we'll be looking at Step 5. By following the 12 steps, attending meetings regularly, and using the OA tools, we're changing our lives. We find hope and encouragement in Overeaters Anonymous. The opinions expressed here today are those of the individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Thanks for letting Nancy and I be your leaders for this workshop. After a moment of silence, all those who wish, join us in the Serenity Prayer, after which the workshop will be concluded.